We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning and welcome to Focus on WILL. I'm Rick Atterbury, guest host during this hour. September is National Preparedness Month, and joining us this morning to talk about campus and community preparedness are University of Illinois Police Lieutenant Todd Short, Director of the Office of Campus Emergency Management, and Greg Abbott, the Deputy Director of the Champaign County Emergency Management Agency and of the METCAD Public Safety Dispatch System. As always, your phone calls are welcome at 333-9455 or toll-free at 800-222-9455. Or if you prefer, you can send us an email at will-talk, that's W-I-L-L-talk at illinois.edu. Good morning and welcome to the show.
Good morning, Rick.
Todd, we'll start with you. Describe the duties of your agencies.
Well, as the Lieutenant of Emergency Planning for the University of Illinois, it's my responsibility to make sure that our faculty, staff, students, and visitors to the campus are prepared to respond to and take appropriate personal protective actions from a wide array of different types of emergencies, whether that be man-made, natural, or technological.
Is this a bigger focus in recent years?
I would say that the focus on emergency planning, specifically throughout higher education, has been increasing every year, probably starting with a major impetus, Virginia Tech. But even before that, talking about 1999, the Columbine incident, mm-hmm. bringing acts of violence into schools in general, I think was a real benchmark type of event that has catapulted emergency planning, not only through K through 12, but throughout higher ed, really putting the importance of that particular discipline on the map to make sure that we're taking any and all proactive efforts we can possibly make within our staffing requirements and the other challenges we've got to deal with on a daily basis at a large institution.
You mentioned Columbine, and one of the things that happened to high schools and K-12 after that was that they started to lock down buildings. But you can't really do that in higher education.
It's very difficult to do that on college campuses. There's been a lot of input throughout the country from all different types of higher education institutions, private, public, colleges with 5,000 people and colleges with 55,000 mm-hmm. people. And we're certainly on the higher end of that. It is extremely difficult, if not impossible, during some types of events that could possibly occur on our campus mm-hmm. to lock down the University of Illinois, which in essence is a city that resides between Urbana and Champaign.
Absolutely. Greg, talk about the duties of the Champaign County Emergency Management Agency.
Champaign County Emergency Management is a resource control point, if you will. We know where all the things are that might be needed by local jurisdictions in a disaster, whether it's cots or water or generators or, you know, trucks to clean up debris, whatever. We support the local emergency management organizations in their mission. Champaign County Emergency Management is never in charge of an incident. We're just there and in a support role and help to coordinate resources as well as open emergency operations centers, staffing, things like that.
You know where the resources are.
Right. We have big books that tell us and computer programs that we can track statewide what resources are available and how to get them.
I think there's a misconception sometimes that the county emergency management agencies have all the stuff in a big warehouse somewhere. That's just not true.
No, we have small caches of equipment, but for a major disaster, you know, we have to go outside the area to get those resources.
And the county emergency management agency in relation to the cities, the county has a support role for a lot of the smaller communities as well.
Right. In the county, there are two accredited emergency management organizations. Champaign County and the City of Champaign has their own. All the other jurisdictions in the county fall under Champaign County Emergency Management for their planning and resources.
And one of the more visible activities that the county engages in is the whole storm spotting organization particularly that, well, actually all year round, because we rely, or you rely, I should say, I guess in full disclosure, I'm the volunteer public information officer for the County Emergency Management Agency. So if I slip up and say we, that's why. But even through the winter, the spotters have a role in reporting back what roads are passable and what roads aren't passable.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and we coordinate the storm spotters. We have our own group of storm spotters, which predominantly protect the city's area, Champaign and Urbana. And then each of the villages has their own group of storm spotters that work for their local emergency management or ESDA organization, that all those reports are funneled back to us, and then we funnel them through to the Weather Service.
There are a lot of things we'll talk about today in terms of how people can prepare for emergencies and man-made and natural disasters, but communications is a big part of that. And text communications, I think, as exhibited as in response to Hurricane Katrina, where the cell phone text capability outlived the cell phone voice capability. But text is a very important part of it. It's only one part. But, Todd, let's talk about Illini Alert and how it works, because we just recently tested it on campus, and not necessarily just on campus. It's broader than that.
Well, just give a little historical background about why we actually implemented Illini Alert. There's a federal piece of legislation called the Higher Education Opportunity Act that essentially mandates higher ed institutions to have a type of notification system, at least a type, to make sure that people can receive timely notifications if there are things that occur that pose an imminent threat to health, life, and safety on campus community. That being said, we went ahead and implemented our text messaging system. We call it Illini Alert for a number of different reasons. Number one, obviously, it's federally mandated. At the same time, we were able to integrate our system to a certain degree with what Champaign County Emergency Management uses. Mahomet uses it, as well as Champaign-Urbana Public Health uses the same vendor that provides us our Illini Alert service. And just so that everybody knows, if you are faculty, staff, or student with the University of Illinois, basically anybody that has an illinois.edu domain attached to their email, they can sign up for that service. They can sign up for this service by visiting emergency.illinois.edu. When they go to that site, when they import their information, what cell phone numbers they want to reach, it's up to their discretion solely. They will receive whatever emergency notifications we put out in the event of some type of crisis that occurs on campus or near campus. Additionally, those that have an illinois.edu domain in their email address will receive an email sent to them at the same time or very closely to the same time that we push the Illini Alert text message out. So not only will you get a text message if you sign up for the service, you're also going to receive an email. And just to make sure I'm clear on that, whether you sign up for the text messaging service or not, if you have an illinois.edu email address, you're going to get an email. We'd love for you to sign up for the Illini Alert text messaging system, because quite frankly, it's another level of redundancy that we can push out to try to ensure that we're notifying as many people as we can as quickly as we can. Additionally, when we push a text message out and we're pushing the emails out simultaneously, we have coded web pages on campus from illinois.edu to public safety, to public affairs, multiple web pages on campus. We've pushed out through an RSS feed basically the same text message that will pop up on a big red box on these properly coded web pages that says emergency. Click here for details. So if something happens, when we send that Illini Alert text message, people that have signed up for the service will get a text message. Those that have an illinois.edu address will get an email. And then automatically this big red box is going to pop up on the coded web pages for the U of I. So we're going to be able to notify you with three levels of redundancy very, very quickly.
Now, can parents and family members of people who are connected with the university also sign up for at least the text message part of it?
Glad you asked that, Rick. Anybody that visits emergency.illinois.edu, faculty, staff, students of our university, can invite two additional people of their choosing to receive our Illini Alert text messages. Moms, dads, significant others, those are usually the people that that our faculty, staff, and students are requesting sign up as well. So we've not only given it to our this opportunity to receive these notifications through our campus community, but the fingers of our text messaging system can extend far outside of Champaign County.
In some sense, it's a marvel that the cell phone system can handle all of that, but it seems to be doing pretty well.
The one thing everybody needs to keep in mind is that technology is a wonderful thing, and we count on it tremendously. And there's nothing wrong with counting on technology, especially in a crisis situation. That being said, we just don't want to rely on one level or one type of notification. In the event that particular type fails, we'd like to have another couple different ways we can go out and reach people. The aforementioned items come to mind very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Again, technology is a fantastic thing. We want to utilize it. When we send text messages out, we can push them out very, very quickly. Cell phone providers and the towers that are receiving our message, that take these messages and then push them out to the person that is holding the cell phone, basically controls the end product for our recipients. And I want everybody to understand that. We'll push them out very, very quickly. And we hope and we pray that during the time of a crisis, the cell phone towers are not overly burdened with whatever type of normal traffic they're receiving, because we want them to turn around and take those text messages and push them out equally as quickly. Oftentimes, that is exactly the case.
We'll talk about some of those lessons a little bit later on in setting up family communications plans and such. But, Greg, Todd mentioned that the same vendor that does the Illini Alert also does a system that anybody in the county can subscribe to if they wish.
Sure. We invite everybody to visit our website, which is champaigncountyema.org. And they can sign up right there to receive weather bulletins. There's an option on there that if they want to receive the Illini alerts that the Todd's group is pushing out, they can sign up to receive those as well. And that's been a very successful program. Fortunately, knock on wood, we haven't had to actually use it for an actual incident yet. But we have that technology available. Just following up on what Todd was saying, it's important for everybody to remember that if the crisis that has hit the community is affecting power or telephone grids, even the cell towers could be down. Many of the cell towers in the area, especially the smaller carriers, they don't even have generator backup on their towers. Mm-hmm. So those could just go dark if the power goes out. And in that case, if you're near one of those towers, your cell phone's not going to work and you won't get any messages.
Now, if people outside the university community want us to subscribe to the more general system, how can they go about doing that?
They can do that right on our website at champaigncountyema.org, and there's a link on there to sign up for emergency alerts.
The Todd pointed out a very important thing, that all of these methods are just one tool in the toolbox of communications, and there are a lot of other ways that you work to inform the community of emergency situations.
And we work closely with the Emergency Alerting System, EAS, which here locally is operated by another radio station.
Mm-hmm.
And their feeds predominantly come from the Weather Service through the Office of Homeland Security, and they push out those messages through EAS. We can also send those out to Weather Alert Radios, which we strongly recommend everybody have in their home, just like a smoke detector, because not only weather information, but other good preparedness information can be transmitted through there. We can actually generate the emergency messages from the Champaign County Emergency Operations Center and have those transmitted out over Weather Alert Radio and through EAS.
And most of the other broadcasters in town, including WILL, they get an automatic feed of an alert that goes through the trigger station here in town. So that's passed on.
Correct. And they have to carry those messages by law. And in some cases, like on local Comcast, it will flash that there's a message on the screen and then direct them to a specific channel that they can monitor for additional information.
And that raises an important issue in that the cable system does have that capability. Satellite systems don't.
Correct.
And over-the-air television does. Todd, you mentioned in the introduction, in passing, the campus security the laws that have come our way. What is the Illinois Campus Security Enhancement Act, and how does that govern the planning that you're involved in at the university?
Well, the Illinois Campus Security Enhancement Act has really, in the last year and a half, 2 years, become a roadmap for how higher education institutions in the state of Illinois must conduct their planning efforts. The Illinois Campus Security Enhancement Act was actually born out of Virginia Tech. Governor Blagojevich at that particular time created a task force made up of higher education folks in the state of Illinois that met in Springfield frequently over about an 18-month period to come up with overall guidelines to help higher education institutions, especially those that don't have an emergency planning program, which that number is high in our state, come up with exactly what should be in their campus emergency operation plan and a campus violence prevention plan, two very different plans that do parallel and sometimes feed into one another. So the Illinois Campus Security Enhancement Act, which became live January 1st, 2009, mandated that our campus emergency operation plan have certain functional items in there that are essentially called annexes, everything like how are we going to communicate with our interagency partners in the event of an emergency, how are we going to communicate emergency information to our constituents on campus, how are we going to manage our resources. From a command and control perspective, who is going to go where? Where are they going to sit, and what are those roles and responsibilities going to be, from policy direction all the way down to tactical operational management? So the Illinois Security Enhancement Act really helped us narrow our focus to come up with a concrete emergency operation plan. The basic plan is currently on our public safety website, which people can access at police.illinois.edu. And that will give everybody a general guideline of what is in our plan and our overall roles and responsibilities and how we're going to respond to certain things that may occur on our campus.
There are a lot of resources in terms of human capital on campus, but getting those folks together and getting them trained must be a large challenge.
It is a large challenge, and fortunately, when we do our exercises on campus, for the most part, and I would give this about a 95% clip, we are including not only campus personnel, but those that we know we're going to have to count on in the event of a crisis. For example, Champaign Police Department, Urbana Police Department, Champaign County Sheriff's Office, local fire agencies, public health providers, those that work in the communication business, like yourself, Rick, because we could have a fantastic operation, but if we're failing in getting information out to our public, the perception of our operation may not be what we want it to be, and perception is extremely important during a crisis because we want to be transparent to the greatest extent possible in our operations to make sure that those that we are sworn to protect and help respond to know what we're doing so that there's not a smoke and mirrors effect.
There are a lot of levels of that, and you mentioned the communications through the Vice Chancellor for Public Affairs. There's a group that draws on communicators who reside in various colleges and units on campus who are being trained to come together and take on different roles in the event of a major emergency to control the communications to the public so that the first responders can work on other things.
Absolutely. And there's, since 2005, there was prior to 2005, there was a federal mandate that came out that says certain people throughout the county level, the state level, the federal level, and or a campus level need to go through certain types of training to make sure that they know how to respond to a critical incident. Communication and operational tactical stuff being huge components of the overall response. And as of 2010, we've trained almost 1,500 people at the university level and with our jurisdictional partners that we know we may need or have to rely on in the event of a building or of a crisis that occurs in a campus building, in a building adjacent to campus, because we wanted to make sure that it wasn't just going to be a police response. It was going to be an interagency effort, because at the end of the day, who knows more about the buildings that are affected than those deans, those directors, those department heads, those facility managers that are in them every single day. Mm-hmm. We don't want to be too naive. We don't want to be too ignorant from a police perspective. We want to make sure that when we do respond or have to respond to an emergency situation on our campus, that everybody's operating off the same playbook.
Greg, Todd touched on the exercises and drills that are conducted by and for the response agencies in the county. Can you talk about a few of those and some of the agencies that get involved?
Well, just recently we've had several exercises. Some of those have been full-blown exercises where we actually put the responders out in the field and run them through scenarios to see how they respond and how their equipment responds. But the majority of them have been what we call tabletop exercises, which, just like the name implies, we just sit as a group of people around a table and you run through a scenario and everybody kind of talks about what their agency's role would be, what resources they could bring to the table, and then usually throw a few monkey wrenches into the plan to see how things need to be adapted on the fly to bring the proper resources to bear on the problem. We've just recently conducted a spill drill here on campus, which was required in order for the university to maintain their fuel farm, and that everything went really well with that. And the drill that was near and dear to my heart this summer was for the Tactical Interoperable Communications Plan, mm-hmm. which is a long name for TICP, which is what we're calling it. And that is a plan that we've never had before that defines how first responders are going to communicate. In the county, it's not as big of a problem because we share a common resource for communication. But when we bring outside resources in, there were often serious gaps in interoperability of how we would communicate with, say, state resources or federal resources. And the TICP is the first step towards trying to put down in paper how everybody communicates so that we know at the technical level how we're going to patch them together if we had a major disaster. If you go back and look at any of the after-action reports from major incidents from Hurricane Andrew to current, the number one thing that's always discussed was communications, that first responders couldn't talk to each other. And so we're trying to take steps both in Champaign County and in the state of Illinois to try to address that.
That was a widely reported issue on 9/11, that for all of the resources that the city of New York could throw at that incident, it was hard for them to talk to each other.
Right. The police officers, couldn't talk to the firefighters, and that's one of the reasons that many of the public safety folks outside the building died was because they could not get word that the building was about to collapse. The firefighters inside knew that, but they couldn't communicate it to the police because their radio systems weren't common. And we've put a common system in place here in the county that police, fire, EMS, and public works all use the same radio system. So when we have a major incident or even a scheduled incident like the Illinois Marathon, we can put all those resources together on one channel so that they can immediately communicate if there's traffic issues or whatever's going on.
Our guests are University of Illinois Police Lieutenant Todd Short, Director of the Office of Campus Emergency Management, and Greg Abbott, the Deputy Director of the Champaign County Emergency Management Agency and of METCAD, the Police Dispatch Agency. We have a caller from Montgomery on line 4. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. I used to be a responder. I was actually I used to work for the Forest Service out west, not in California, and I'm sure you guys are familiar with the chaos that goes on there, especially during the summertime with the fires. I got to say this with due respect to a lot of places out here, it seems like that some of the first responders and some of the mutual aid responses are slow. It just seems like it's lacking a little bit, and I think a lot of it has to do with the responsibilities of the security and, campus security, because I do realize that campuses around the country are limited in their law enforcement. And what I was going to ask you guys would be, do you guys ever consider having a regular police force, for instance, Champaign County, the county police department, maybe having an office there? I know in other places around the country I've seen that before, and it seems to work out well. Now, having said that, I know with somebody running around a campus with a gun, And it's virtually impossible to stop them right away. But I've seen a lot of places in action, and having been a part of some of the mutual aid responses out west, it seems to me that, you know, the more equipped you guys are, the better off you'd be. What do you guys say?
Well, I think you bring up many interesting points, and I would offer this as a response to your comments. The University of Illinois has been very fortunate that we've got a fully sworn police department. We're actually going to be increasing our numbers to 59 sworn officers here in the very near future. A lot of that is based upon operational needs that is required from our daily interactions with the campus community. There are a lot of higher education institutions in the country, however, that do not have sworn police departments. And I've been a strong advocate, based upon many of your comments that I agree with, that educational institutions, specifically on the higher ed side, would need or require a sworn police staff to make sure that they have the appropriate personnel that have been trained and that can respond to a wide variety of incidents that occur on campus. From the university's perspective, it would certainly not be an efficient response if we had to call the Champaign Police Department or the Urbana Police Department or the State Police or the Champaign County Sheriff's Department to come and deal with an active shooter, heaven forbid, that may or could occur on our campus. Because of that, we go through specific types of training to make sure that we can deal with those types of specific high-impact, low-frequency events to make sure that, again, we're protecting and serving the people that we are supposed to protect and serve.
Todd, you mentioned earlier, and the caller points out, that there's a wide range of capabilities at different colleges, universities, and junior colleges. There are some institutions where the police are, it's not a police department, it's a security force, and they're not even armed.
That's absolutely correct, Rick.
Greg, the caller raised an issue or a question about mutual aid. That's an important part of the response for everyone.
Absolutely. Mutual aid is a thing we talk about all the time. And, you know, I'd point out that the university is kind of nestled in between Champaign and Urbana, which both also have their police forces. And then the sheriff's office, you know, covers everything around the cities. And because we share common communications and from MECED, the single communications point, we can disseminate information on a problem, whether it's on campus or in one of the communities or even out in the county, in seconds to all the police officers in the area. And it's not uncommon to have informal mutual aid occurring. Could be as simple as a university officer on a traffic stop that a Champaign or Urbana officer will stop and back them, or vice versa. Or they get a call of, you know, suspicious activity at the union, and an Urbana unit happens to be nearby, they'll stop and help them, or they might be sent to back them up, too. Mm-hmm. So it does happen on a regular basis that mutual aid's occurring.
Thanks for the call, and we should remind folks that they, too, can make a phone call into the program this morning on Focus at 333-9455 or toll-free at 800-222-9455. Or if you prefer, you can send us an email at will-talk.illinois.edu. The caller mentioned the Forest Service and fighting those large incidents. Actually, much of the command structure that we're being taught these days comes from the fire service.
Right. NIMS is predominantly from the California wildfires. That's where that framework was developed, and then FEMA adopted it.
We have a caller from Champaign on line one. Good morning.
Good morning. I've noticed when I listen to WILL AM, during electrical storms, there are often dead air periods, sometimes significant, maybe as much as 15 minutes. I wonder if you can say something about what the cause for this is, and do you expect to upgrade your equipment in a way that might shorten those outages?
That, I don't know we have the expertise in the room for that, but I can tell you a week from today at this very time we'll be doing an Ask the Manager segment, and that'll be a good question for that program.
Okay.
I do know from my previous life in commercial radio that some of the AM transmitters these days, they do a reset when there are lightning strikes close to them, and that causes problems. But we can get that answer for you from the management next week. Thanks for the call. Todd, in August of this year, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention wrapped up a pilot project. We talked about this a little bit relative to the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District regarding various issues that would come up during a pandemic. Most of the response agencies and healthcare institutions in the county were part of that. What were some of the lessons learned?
Well, we participated with the CDC from a multi-jurisdictional perspective in Champaign County to make sure that we could test our healthcare model of care, Carle Hospital, Provena Hospital, nursing homes, pharmacies. We wanted to make sure that we had a good indication of exactly what kind of patient traffic they could handle before surge facilities perhaps would need to be implemented or activated. We wanted to make sure that from a command and control perspective, we knew who was going to be the boss or the bosses of the incident to make sure that there was equal coordination between traditional first responder agencies, police, fire, EMS, and those that are really going to be on the front line, those being in our healthcare providers, again, Carle, Provena, McKinley Health Center, those types of places. We wanted to make sure that if we get another pandemic, that the virus that we were affected by last year mutates around Christmas time and we have to deal with another wave of this, that we have more concrete planning, more concrete measures in place to make sure that we were putting people in the right roles and responsibilities and we knew who was going to talk to whom at what times of the day, those types of things, those things that you don't want to be doing during an actual crisis event. You want to have a lot of that groundwork laid out in front of you so that everybody knows pretty much what they need to be doing.
And that, it was interesting, the pandemic response that we actually participated in to a certain level last fall had been practiced over the last year or so. And we have resources on campus. Dr. Palinkas from McKinley is a terrific infectious disease specialist.
Well, we're lucky in Champaign County that we've got a lot of medical expertise at our fingertips. And Dr. Palinkas and many of the doctors at Carle and Provena, many of our infectious disease specialists with the University of Illinois, worked very closely with each other to provide a lot of guidance, both policy and some potentially operational that we dealt with last year to make sure that we were letting everybody in Champaign County, to the greatest extent possible, know exactly what we were doing and why we were doing it. We were extremely fortunate.
Greg, it occurs to me when we talk about these drills that we have 6 to 8 sort of disasters every year in terms of the football games at Memorial Stadium that kind of give us a leg up because you have to coordinate a lot of agencies for every football game, and it got even more involved when the Bears were in town.
Right. When the NIMS protocol started to come out and we started looking at them, we quickly recognized that we were already doing that for home football games and special events. Already had a command post in place that all the major players were sitting around the table, so anything that popped up, we were ready to throw it to the subject matter expert to call the shots and deal with it. The Bears did throw some interesting wrinkles into that, some things that are a much larger scale than what we have to deal with for the average home Illinois game. It was an interesting season.
I don't think people have any idea of the number of agencies and the number of personnel that are involved to do traffic and security for a football game.
It's a high number of police officers and civilian personnel, from people that guard the lots to taking the money to the ushers that are indispensable inside the stadium. Things have switched there in the 27 years that I've been involved in the command post for football. Used to be police officers responded to everything, any problem inside the stadium, from somebody dropping ice over the balcony to a fight. Mm-hmm. And that role has shifted where the ushers are the first people to go in and ask people to, you know, play good together and don't bother their neighbors. And then we have police officers to go back them up when they don't comply or if we get a really serious thing like a fight.
And you have students in the emergency response for heart attacks or other distress they're stationed throughout the stadium to get there before the paramedics do.
Yeah, and that's been a huge plus. When I first started doing it, we'd have to send an ambulance crew off the stadium floor, and it could take them 15 to 20 minutes to drag all their equipment up to the east balcony. Now, Illini Emergency Medical System, they have red railings in parts of the stadium where there will be a paramedic or an EMT crew stationed. And they're very advanced in the support that they can give, and they can get somebody down to the paramedics really quickly.
Todd, this is September's Preparedness Month, and before the time gets away from us, let's talk a little bit about the role of the individual, because no matter how much work you and Greg and all the response agencies do, ultimately it comes down to the individual taking response. And in the workplace, at the university, what are some of the things that the individuals ought to be doing?
Well, there's a couple different ways I'll answer that question, Rick. Mm-hmm. There's a very, very large push right now that we are advocating throughout campus for individual buildings on campus to be completing their own unique building emergency action plans. There's a template that we have created because we knew when we were going to take on this particular project, which is extremely important, that people needed to have very strong guidance, a very good template that was about 80% done for them, that would take into account personal protective actions that someone within a building may need to take in the event of an emergency. And those actions basically get boiled down to, if something happens in my building or I'm walking down the street, wherever my geographical location may be, what do I do if I need to shelter myself in place, which means I need to hunker down because where I'm at is safe and I don't know where an alternate safe place would be, so I'm going to stay right here. I'm comfortable with where I'm at. Mm-hmm. Or where I'm currently at is not okay, and I need to evacuate. I need to get out of the building. Whether we're students, faculty, staff, or visitors, regardless of whether our building emergency action plan template has been completed, there are things that people can do from a personal self-awareness perspective that will go a long way in helping them to take appropriate personal protective actions in the event of a crisis. For example, one of the things we talk about and is advocated strongly with the Illinois Emergency Management Agency is have a to-go kit mm-hmm. ready to go for you if you work in an office building on campus. And we've got, a blizzard coming in January and we're expecting 14 inches of snow and I can't make it home, what should be in my blizzard preparedness kit? The IEMA site, which is IEMA.gov, will take you there. But common sense precautions goes a long way. I think I need blankets in there. I think I need flashlights in there, food and water to get me through a day or two just in case I can't make it home, as an example. But there's a lot of different things that people can think about, such as their own unique communication plan. Who am I going to contact if I'm in a situation that requires some kind of a first responder response? Who do I need to contact to make sure that my loved ones know that I'm okay?
Mm-hmm.
Who do I need to contact to let somebody know that I'm not okay and this is what's happening, and please send the cavalry because we need an appropriate response?
Mm-hmm.
Those types of things.
One of the things I think along those lines, when you mentioned how do you let your family and friends know you're okay, that after Katrina, a lesson was that shouldn't necessarily be someone in town, that the cell phone system in particular was letting calls go cross-country that couldn't go across town because some of the system was down, some of it was overwhelmed. So if you can get Aunt Martha a couple states over to agree to be your communications hub, that's a good thing.
It is a good thing, and it goes under the same metaphor as putting all of your eggs in the same basket.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, if you can reach your tentacles out as far as you think is reasonable to make sure that if you're trying to communicate with somebody locally, if you can't communicate with them, there's a strong probability that the entire square grid is down, and we need to go outside of that. So those are the people that I would put in my in-case-of-emergency contact mm-hmm. plan.
We have a question from Urbana on line one. Good morning.
Hi. I'm part of the animal research community on campus, and I was wondering if animal rights activism is on your radar at all, and if there's anyone in the office that monitors the sort of news feeds that alert us to PETA is active in your area at this time or something like that.
It's been quite a while since we've received any ELF or ALF or PETA alerts, but we are on a statewide and a federal alert list where we receive almost daily information and intelligence from the federal government and the Illinois State Police on their terrorism watch list. So if we were to receive something like that, indicating some kind of a perceived or a verified threat, then that communication would obviously go to the people on campus who deal with those particular type of research areas to make sure that you all are in the loop and know what we know.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Greg, the following up on what Todd was saying about personal preparedness on campus and how people prepare their buildings, everybody's got the same kind of role to play. You need to be responsible for yourself for, what, 3 days at least?
Absolutely. We recommend 72 hours of self-sufficiency in their home. Again, same things Todd was saying. They have non-perishable foods, plenty of water, and make sure you have enough for everybody you think could be in your house. And, you know, it wouldn't hurt to even plan for a little bit of extra if you've got the storage room and the means to obtain it. Just plan to have a couple extra folks there because you don't know who might be visiting when something occurs, or a neighbor that's particularly, you know, bad off, or family from another part of the country that happens to be here, or even from the city that their house is without power, but you have power. Maybe you might inherit some people that you wouldn't expect otherwise.
In the event, one of the things I think that one of the suggestions that's been added for that kit over the years is that having some cash in there, because in the event of a widespread power outage, ATMs aren't going to work, and unlike our parents who probably used to keep some cash hidden somewhere because it was inconvenient to go to the bank, not very many of us do that anymore.
Yeah, you know, people just don't do that. They expect their credit cards to always work wherever they go, and you're right, that's not the case. Even if you go to the gas station to get gas, if they have power to run their pumps, they may not have connectivity outside to be able to process a credit card.
Todd, the a couple of years ago, there was a widespread power outage on campus on a Sunday evening, as I recall. In fact, I think I was working on a pledge drive right here at WILL when the power went off. That was kind of it was a way to exercise things in a real-world environment. What were some of the things you learned from that power outage?
One of the things that we learned from that power outage is that emergency communications predominantly use power to push those messages out.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, we thought about that particular issue prior to implementing and activating, paying for the Alani Alert System that we're using right now. The messages that we were able to push to our campus community through the Alani Alert System was possible because that particular system was not hosted on our campus.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the big takeaways from that particular incident. The need for redundant generator power, which unfortunately costs money, was another big takeaway. We're fortunate because we have a very strong facilities and services division at the University of Illinois that knows exactly where our generators are and where our generators are not,
mm-hmm.
so that when we get power back up and running, we know where to push the power to first to make sure that critical research, basically levels of prioritized research, what is where, how much is riding on this mm-hmm. particular topic,
mm-hmm.
can get the power to maintain what they are working on as quickly as we possibly can.
And to say nothing of the fact that there are at any given time hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of refrigerated and frozen food in the system for the dormitories and that sort of thing.
Well, we want to make sure that we can get power and heat to the greatest extent possible. Fortunately, that particular power outage occurred in March, and that was a particularly nice day, as I recall.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't 30 below zero like it could have been in January. We want to make sure that we can provide heat, provide food to our almost 9,000 students who live in residence halls. That was a huge top priority for us.
Greg, along those lines, when we talk about people being prepared for 72 hours, it doesn't have to be I think one of the things that we see is that, for example, a tornado may hit a small part of town. Generally, mm-hmm. they're not that huge. But the power will be off all over the community. For the folks who aren't directly affected, patience is a real requirement there, because the first responders are going to go where the greatest need is.
Absolutely. You know, patience is a virtue in a disaster. And if you're not affected by it and your power's out, don't call 911 to find out when your power is going to come back on, because our operators don't have a crystal ball that they can look into and be able to tell you. We do communicate directly with the utilities during disasters, but a lot of times they can't even tell us what is going on because it takes them time to assess their network, find exactly what has broken, and then make a determination of what it's going to take to repair it. And while they keep us informed, we're not their number one priority. Their number one priority is trying to restore service.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right that a lot of people will be impacted by it, even if their neighborhood is not the one that was hit by it directly.
Todd, you talked about the building plans, building by building across campus that your office has been working on. You're also working on a continuity of operations plan at the unit level around campus. What is a continuity of operations plan?
Well, a business continuity or continuity of operation plan is basically the plan that should kick in when you need to restore your critical essential functions post-emergency. Your building emergency action plan really relates to the planning and the response phases of emergency management. Business continuity is a little bit different. If the tornado comes through, heaven forbid, and leaves WILL's building in a heap of bricks, how then do we maintain our essential critical functions to make sure that our operational or our business plan can keep rolling? That in general terms, that's what a business continuity plan does.
Mm-hmm. And small businesses can learn from that. It's not that hard to prepare one. I actually teach how to prepare one for small and medium-sized businesses. And you can distill it to about 7 pages.
Well, the adage in emergency management is that the thicker it is, the less likely you are that you're going to use it. And we see a lot of different plans, throughout the country in higher ed and other places that are, you know, an inch, 2, 3, maybe 4 inches thick. And the probability of flipping to the page that you need for that information, that key contact, that phone number, mm-hmm. is substantially more complicated the thicker that binder becomes. So thinner is definitely better.
Greg, we touched on this actually back toward the beginning, the mutual aid concept, but I think that pretty much started with probably rural fire departments and has kind of grown from there. A lot of agencies are involved these days.
Yeah, there's a lot of different mutual aid agreements both within Champaign County and with our neighboring counties here in East Central Illinois as well as with the state, and that extends from police and fire to even public works now have mutual aid agreements where they'll send resources to other parts of the state. And the agreements are pretty short and sweet, but they spell out who gets paid, how much time you have to be there before you start getting reimbursed, and then what levels of resources that you're expected to send. But none of those agreements require somebody to respond. So if we had been hit by a tornado in Champaign County and, say, Vermilion County also got hit and they were calling for resources, we're not required to send anything if we're overwhelmed as well.
The those of us who've been around a while, the Valentine's Day ice storm of 1990 is kind of a watershed. And when you talk about public works and mutual aid, that was basically a utility and public works disaster, and it was an incredibly expensive disaster.
It was very expensive, and it took them days just to get the streets reopened so the power crews could navigate and figure out what work they needed to do to restore their grid.
And within the state, there is a protocol for drawing on inmates in the Department of Corrections who are in minimum security or work release programs and working with the Department of Transportation, and you'll see a lot of big orange trucks show up at many disaster scenes.
Right, and the inmates are going to be in their orange jumpsuits, and we had them out in Ogden helping mm-hmm. clean up in 96 when Ogden got hit.
What are some kind of closing comments you'd like to make to the listeners about their personal preparedness here and as they need to give this a little bit of thought?
I guess my sincere advice to everybody, Rick, would just be to have your own mental plan in place, if nothing more. You don't necessarily have to have a plan on paper. Just be aware of your surroundings. Keep your eyes open. Be very perceptive of what's going on around you when you walk back and forth to class from your place of employment to your vehicle at night. if you just keep your eyes open, your ears listening, you stand a strong probability of not putting yourself in a dangerous situation.
Greg, final words?
I think Todd touched on it very well there. And keep in mind what you're going to do if your plan doesn't work. If you are walking to your car and your plan is, I'm going to pick up my cell phone and call 911, just give a moment's thought to what you're going to do if your battery's dead or if your cell phone's broken for some reason. Know what your next step is going to be. Just kind of think that out.
And a little tool that we didn't used to have was pushing the panic button on our key fob. Make a lot of noise.
That's always a good one.
Well, we hope that folks have learned a little bit about personal preparedness today and the way that the campus is looking at preparedness in the current environment. With our guests, Todd Short, University of Illinois Police Lieutenant in the Office of Campus Emergency Management, and Greg Abbott, the Deputy Director of the Champaign County Emergency Management Agency and of the METCAD Public Safety Dispatch System. It's been my pleasure to be guest host today. I'm Rick Atterbury. I'll be back next Friday, and we'll be doing an Ask the Manager segment of Focus where we'll have a civilian, that'd be me, kind of asking questions of the management. And, of course, as always, you're invited to participate. Stay tuned for news from National Public Radio and the second hour of Focus at 11.